This is Zorba Pastor on Your Health. I'm Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor. Zorba is here to talk with you about what's new in healthy living, share some down-to-earth advice, and some great lifestyle tips to help you get the most out of life. If you'd like to talk with Zorba, call this number now, 1-800-462-7413. And Zorba, tell us about the topics you brought along to talk over this time.
Yes, the cost of obesity. I don't just mean the medical cost of obesity, but is there a cost in your job? In other words, do you make less money if you're heavier? We'll talk about some interesting data. And the FDA Advisory Committee comments on genetically altered salmon. We are going to discuss that in detail.
That'll be talked over from quite some time, I would imagine.
You betcha.
How about our recipe?
Yes, Ilona's homemade granola. And if you love granola, you will love this recipe. It is dynamite.
Had granola for breakfast this morning.
granola lover.
I bet this one's better from Oak Creek, Wisconsin listener Ilona Backstrand. Don't forget that number, 800-462-7413. And don't forget that later on in the hour, we have our medical myth buster coming up. Right now, Zorba, our first caller. We welcome a listener in Carbondale, Illinois. Hi.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Fine. How can we help?
Well, you can help hopefully a lot here. I am an avid weightlifter and a martial artist. I'm a two-stripe blue belt in jiu-jitsu, and I've been training for about 5 to 6 years. About 3 years ago, I started getting really acute pain in my elbows. I've gone in and got x-rays, and I have bone spurs. But the doctor said, you know, surgery may or may not help. I'm at the point now where I can't do a lot of exercises anymore, such as bear crawls, because the pain is just really bad. I've taken glucosamine pills. I've taken the steroid patches where they put steroids on a like a patch and then they electrocute you a little bit. And I am now on a pill called Disoflanec, or I guess the other term is Voltaren, and I'm wondering, is there anything else I can do to make the pain go away? Because it's at the point where it's just pretty awful right now.
Yeah, ouch. Has any of this stuff helped you at all?
Well, right now, the pills I'm taking now are helping, but, you know, I'm still, it still hurts quite a bit. Like, I still can't do, I can do push-ups and I can lift weights, but I can't do anything that's quick and sharp, jarring type of pain.
Oh, God.
No, I have to.
You know, that's pretty awful, especially for an elite athlete like yourself who obviously has trained and done this. How long have you been doing, you know, these exercises and jiu-jitsu and everything, weightlifting? How long have you really been actively involved with that?
10, 12 years.
Okay, long time. Well, first of all, let's talk about what it's from. What it's from is it's an overuse injury. And when we look at overuse injuries, you know, overall, globally, we often look at people who are in factories and they're doing a repetitive movement over and over and over again. We look at people who have carpal tunnel syndrome, which is an overuse injury, but it's usually from pressure that's on the base of the wrist. And in your case, you have an overuse injury from the exercises that you do. So, for instance, bear crawls, you know, just push those muscles, push those ligaments in a way that, you know, that really will bother you. And what happens is then the tendons become inflamed. And once they become inflamed, it's very, very, very tough, you know, to get them to settle down. So one treatment is to inject steroids into the tendon. Great idea. Works sometimes, but it has side effects. You know, they're steroids. And so sometimes the tendons will actually weaken. So we don't like to do shots into the tendons themselves unless they have to. So you've got this patch, and the patch works. It's so-so. For some people, it works a little bit. And so what you do is then you try different anti-inflammatories, and diclofenac, which is Voltaren, is another type of a drug like ibuprofen, and for some people that works. And the problem is all of this is tough for you. Now, have you changed your exercise routine?
Not particularly. So, I mean, I still there's not. I don't know what else I could do. I do just about everything. So.
I've got to tell you the truth. The real issue is it's an overuse injury. And so what you have to do is look towards exercises that you can do that are not the same type of repetitive exercise and not do that exercise every single day. It's the repetition of pulling on the ligaments every single day in the same exact way that caused it. So if you can't do bear claws, you don't do bear claws.
Yeah, but he's doing push-ups. Would that keep it from healing?
If it's not painful, it's okay. If it's painful,
yeah, push-ups don't bother me.
So push-ups do not bother you. So it's not. So what you want to do is say, look, I used to do bear claws. I can't do them now. Now, a year from now, and we're talking about a long time, you might be able to do them, but when you do them, you might run into the same problem. And part of that is that we have to deal with our aging bodies. We'd all love to be 18, have that body of an 18-year-old or a 20-year-old, and have it forever. But the fact is, we don't have that. We have sort of a curriculum vitae of our body over time, and so we have to go with our strong suit. And for you, if you can do push-ups and weights, that your strong suit, and if you can't do bear claws, stay away from it so that you can do your jiu-jitsu. In other words, you're doing repetitive exercise that is taking away from the fast things that you want to do in the jiu-jitsu part of your exercise. So I would stay away from anything repetitive that causes the pain. I wouldn't do fast exercise that may do it. I'd wait about 6 weeks after you stop doing things like bear claws, and that might be the trick. And diclofenac, by the way, is a great drug. It works. It really is a very good drug to take, and it's safe.
Okay.
Good luck.
Well, thank you. I appreciate the
We appreciate your calling. Bye-bye. You have your black belt yet? So
You know what I have? I've got a multicolored belt. That's what I have. I've got a multicolored belt. It's about what it is. That was not my strong suit. Jiu-jitsu, weightlifting, never. It's just not my thing. But I do exercise, as
yes,
you know.
You do. Yes,
you know,
you
I do exercise, and, you know, I'm allergic to exercise. So I've got to, you know.
But you fight through it.
You know, it's just like taking Claritin. You know, you got to fight through those allergies to make it through the day.
800-462-7413 is our toll-free number. That's 800-462-7413. A listener joins now, Zorba, in Hamilton, Georgia. Hi.
Hi.
What's up?
Well, I've been having low back pain that radiated down my left leg off and on for about 12 to 15 years. Well, last year I started having consistent back pain, so I was sent for an MRI, and they found two degenerated discs. Well, recently I began having severe upper back and shoulder pain that radiated down my right arm into my fingers. So I went for another MRI, discovered I had two more degenerated discs. Now, I've never played any contact sports or I hadn't been in any accidents, so I was told that it was probably hereditary. Well, I have two questions. Is it common for discs to just go bad, and is there a condition that can cause this to happen? And how can I keep any more discs from going bad?
By the way, great questions. Great questions. Let's go back a bit. Your mom healthy? Does she have arthritis, pain, or discomfort?
She has arthritis. Yes.
Okay. What are you taking, by the way, for your pain? For this, are you on any medication at all?
Well, I was given an anti-inflammatory, which I was kind of hesitant to take because I heard some bad things about it.
Okay, let's go back to that afterwards. Okay, if I go out on the street in New York City and I take 100 people who are 50 years of age and older who have no pain at all, none, and I do MRIs on them, 20% of them to 25% will have, quote, degenerative discs. Mm. They don't have any pain. They have degenerative discs. So the presence of a degenerative disc on an MRI does not mean that's causing the pain, period. That's really important. Why? Because a lot of doctors go in and they say, well, you need neck surgery. No, you need back surgery because you've got a disc. I'm going to show it to you on the MRI. And the answer is no. We don't know what causes 50% of all back and neck pain. We don't know. Now, if you've got stuff that sort of feels like electrical stimulation in your fingers, it may be from a disc. And disc disease is common. It's as common as dirt. It's like 20 to 25% of the people in their 50s already have these discs that shrink and have less fluid in them, and then the bones can pull down, the bones will pull down and then push onto the nerves and may cause the pain. So it's very common. There is a hereditary component, and that's it. Now, the real issue is, what do you do about the pain? That's the issue. So first thing I recommend, I sort of have a three-pronged step of looking at it. Number one, cheap, easy, inexpensive Tylenol generic arthritis strength. Why? It lasts for 8 hours. 1 to 2 tablets, 3 times a day, over the counter. Take it for 2 to 4 weeks. See if it gets rid of your pain. Easy. If it gets rid of your pain, you're home. And then if 2 tablets, 3 times a day gets rid of your pain after 2 to 4 weeks, see if 1 tablet, 3 times a day works. And if that's the case, you're done. Now, if it's not the case, I recommend an anti-inflammatory. They're very good. Do they have side effects? Yeah, but pretty minimal. Most people tolerate them. You know, there are some side effects. Read the label. But on the whole, I think they are very, very safe drugs, commonly used. I like Aleve generic. Why? Twice a day. Easier than ibuprofen. Double the dose in the bottle. 2 tablets twice a day. See if that works. Now, If that fails, or if you have electrical-like pain in your fingers, then you have to get a prescription for your doctor for a drug called gabapentin. G-A-B-A-pentin, gabapentin, or another drug in that class. These are seizure drugs that work with the electrical pain that some people have with discs, and they're dynamite, and they might help you.
Okay.
So I wouldn't worry about the degeneration because you're – how old are you this year?
38.
Well, 38 is a little young to have it, so that means it's inherited. But you know what? About 15% of the people have it at 48, so you're ahead of your time.
Okay.
Keep up with dealing with the pain and exercises to keep your body supple. So,
okay.
Thank you so much. Thanks for listening to Public Radio. It's a great source of information.
Thank you for your help.
You're welcome.
We appreciate the call. Now, back surgery used to be very, very problematic. Is it still?
Well, it's very interesting. If you're having back surgery for back pain, it's more likely to fail. If you're having back surgery for leg pain, it's more likely to succeed. In other words, if you have pain in your leg that's electrical-like and shock-like that's unremitting, it's probably from a disc. But if you've got aches in your back and pain in your back and you have the surgery, it's got less of a chance of succeeding. And the problem with back surgery is that there are I know you're shocked, there are unscrupulous back surgeons all over the country. Now, not every city has them, but most cities have them. And so if you go into a back surgeon and they go, I think you should, you know, have surgery. My recommendation, before you have the surgery, go get another opinion. And sometimes that best opinion is an academic site or a university where I know they're, on the whole, more trustworthy. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's what I do. But I worry about back surgery because some of it shouldn't be done. That's what I worry about.
Our toll-free number is 800-462-7413. Now, Zorba, what's this study on obesity measuring the cost to individuals of being obese and finding that women are have more of a cost than do men?
Yeah,
why?
Shock of shocks. Well, a lot of it has to do with the prejudice against people who are heavy. Let's talk about that component. When
What's the cost?
Well, they looked at the cost. They estimated that the annual cost of being obese for a woman is about $5,000, and the annual cost for being a man is about $2,500.
Yeah, well, what does that mean?
Part of it is from healthcare costs. In other words, how much more do they have to go into a doctor? Part of it is pharmaceuticals. What extra medication do they need because they're sick and they're obese and they may be at risk for diabetes? And the other part is they don't get hired as much and their salary is less.
Ah, discrimination in the workplace.
Absolutely, discrimination in the workplace by people who are heavy. And that is really hard to prove, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you could prove, you could say, you didn't hire me because, you know, I'm red, green, yellow, black, brown, blue. That's one issue. But it's very hard to prove you didn't hire me because I'm an overweight woman. That's just a much harder sell.
Yeah, there are no quotas for weight, even unwritten quotas.
No, that's right. Not at all. But what happens is that women are more likely to be paid less and have a job that is not as satisfying. There may be other issues then. They're more likely to see a doctor. And I want to comment about this. The particular study we're looking at was supported by a gastric band study. In other words, trying to show that you should have a gastric
band.
I've seen this data before. The data on the discrimination of obese people is irrefutable. It's definitely there. And the fact is, women are much more likely to be discriminated against. Men, if they're heavy, they go, well, they're a little heavy. But women are more likely to think of themselves as fat. Yeah. I mean, there's a whole issue with male obesity not being as adverse from a society point of view as female obesity.
It used to be that fat men were jolly. It's still a little like that.
Yeah, no, that's what I mean. But that's part of the discriminatory, issue. Now, when we look at the fact that about 2/3 of Americans, shocking study, are either overweight or obese, and that childhood obesity has tripled in the last 30 years, we're talking about a major society change. And this is very complex to settle. But I think the discrimination issue is something we have to attack as a society.
That number is 800-462-7413. And Zorba, here's a listener now in Knoxville, Tennessee. Hi.
Hi, Tom. Hi, Dr. Zorba. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, we appreciate it. How can Zorba help you?
Well, first, I'm going to make you a promise, Tom. We're not going to talk about tofu today.
Oh, good. That's good news.
You also just mentioned something about disseminating information on public radio. And that's exactly where this starts. Recently, I have heard, again, a plea on my public radio station about need for blood donations, mm-hmm. that you know, the local blood bank only has a one-day supply or less than a one-day supply. And so here I am, a healthy 50-year-old man, and I used to give blood all the time. But around 1982 or something, there was a new question on the form when you went in, was, have you ever had sex with another man?
Hmm.
And you know what? I'm a gay man. And all of a sudden, I couldn't give blood anymore. And these days, I hear more and more pleas for giving blood, and the same prohibitions seem to still be in effect that were in effect back in 1982 when we didn't know what HIV was, and we didn't really know what was causing AIDS.
Yeah, like you can't get HIV from a woman. You can only get it from... How ridiculous is that?
Well, exactly. And you know, at that point, I don't think the virus had even been identified. I had heard recently that now that we have good testing, that these prohibitions are being, at least being considered to revise them. But I haven't heard that it's been finalized yet. You know, this is still just an honor system, it seems to be. I mean, you go in, you say... You know, you answer the questions truthfully, they kick you out.
Oh, yeah. No. It's totally there are a number of things here, first of all. Here it is. You know, if a man has sex with men, they won't take your blood. But that means men who have sex with women can't get HIV.
Yeah, right.
I mean,
it's
give me a break.
Yeah.
I mean, if they really want to do it in the right way, they would say, if you've ever had sex with another human, you can't get blood.
Yeah.
And so those are the only people who can get blood. The reality is we can test for HIV, and we've been testing for HIV. And the issue, I think, is one of a discrimination issue. I mean, that's what it is. Because if you're looking at HIV, there are a lot of men who have HIV who have engaged in unprotected sex who are heterosexual. So why aren't they discriminated? They could say, have you ever engaged in unprotected sex? Therefore, we're not going to take your blood. And the reason why they don't do it is there wouldn't be any blood.
Well, and as the caller says, this is all just based on what a person says. There's no
absolutely
proof.
And also, when we look back at the beginning with the issue, that was a totally different issue. That's before we could test for HIV. And that has been many, many, many years in the past. So I think this is an issue of discrimination against gays. That's what I think.
Well, is this blood not tested when we
give
blood?
Of course the blood is tested. The blood has been tested for years.
Well, then what's the point of that? Doesn't make any sense.
Well, it doesn't make any sense. And what happens is you develop these rules and regulations that are years in the making. Now, you said they're reconsidering, you think. I have not heard anything about them, about their actually reconsidering that. But what you say really, to me, has more than a whiff of truth to it for the fact that, A, it's an honor system, and, B, what they're saying is heterosexual men and women can't get HIV, and we know that is not the case.
Right.
And these are, like you said, these are old rules that were put in place from 20 years ago. They should be reconsidered. I agree with you 100%. And who knows? Maybe someone from the Red Cross and the transplant teams are actually listening to public radio.
Well, thanks for your help, Doc. Appreciate it.
Yeah, we appreciate the call. How ridiculous when we're always asking, as the caller mentioned, for people to donate blood and then putting roadblocks in their way.
Right. Now, I understand where the history came from. That wasn't ridiculous.
Yeah, but
the reality is, that's old stuff.
Yeah.
We've been testing it for two decades.
Our number is 800-462-7413. And Zorba, before we break, you better buckle in because we're about to kick off another fast-paced edition of Rapid Fire. Are you ready?
Yes.
Cliff from Ashland, Wisconsin is trying to catch up with his nose because when he runs, it runs. It also runs pretty steady during cooler weather. He asks, is there an over-the-counter product I could use to stop the cold weather runny nose?
The answer is no, there is not an over-the-counter product, but there's a drug called Atrovent, A-T-R-O-V-E-N-T, nasal spray that'll dry things up, and you can use that in the winter, and you will be fine and not look like a snotty-nosed runner.
Next up is Rich in Lafayette, Indiana, who wants the lowdown on protein fats. He writes, I'm an active 51-year-old who does a lot of strength training, and I know beans, but I would like to know if I'm doing the right thing by eating dry, roasted, unsalted peanuts and also a few eggs each week.
Absolutely. I love dry, roasted, salted, or unsalted peanuts, and I love eggs, and a few times a week, it's great. Go for it.
Moving along to Jean, who has a sagging skin question. If weight is lost quickly, is skin more likely to sag than if it's lost more slowly?
I think when you lose a lot of weight, sometimes your skin just doesn't fit right, and unfortunately, that's your coating.
Fast or slow doesn't matter?
Doesn't seem to make much of a difference. Not that I've ever read or I've ever seen.
Jim in Jacksonville, Florida wants some green tea info. He writes, my dental hygienist told me that green tea stains teeth more than regular tea. Is this true?
Well, depends on how much green tea you're drinking. If you're drinking it moment after moment after moment after moment and you're putting that stuff on your teeth, it does stain your teeth, but not every dental hygienist knows the answer.
But is it different than black tea?
Who knows?
You don't, I guess.
I obviously
Peter
don't.
Wakes up from his daily siesta with a racing pulse. However, this doesn't happen in the morning. Should he worry about it?
Stop sleeping. That's the whole thing. Just stay up. You'll be just fine. No, don't worry about it. You know what? There's enough to worry about in life. You don't have to worry about your pulse is fast or your pulse is slow when you get up from sleeping.
Finally, Mary would like to settle her stomach, writing, I have been taking 10 milligrams of Lexapro for job-related anxiety. I'm feeling so nauseated, I can barely function. Any thoughts?
Sometimes if you take a pill at night, you won't have some of the side effects. That's what I would recommend it. Or take it with food.
We're out of time for this edition of Rapid Fire, but make sure to get your question in for our next round. Just send your email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
Our recipe is coming up next, this one from a listener. We have lots more of your calls, of course, some more interesting research to talk over, our medical myth buster too. All here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. That number again, 800-462-7413. We have a line open, some callers waiting, but you can join us now if you'd like. But before we take our next call, it is, of course, recipe time. And for that recipe this time, we are happy to welcome Oak Creek, Wisconsin listener Ilona Backstrand. Ilona, hi. This recipe for Ilona's homemade granola. And how did you come up with this one?
Well, I've tried several different granola recipes, and I was never really happy with one. Some had some ingredients that I really liked, and others had other ones that I liked. So I thought, well, why not combine it? I tried some store-bought ones, and they have additives and preservatives, which I didn't like. Mm-hmm. And when I went to the natural ones, their taste was more like cardboard. So I thought, well, I've got to make my own.
And so this was a sort of put this together, take this out, put this in sort of arrangement?
Yes, exactly.
Oh.
You know, I love what you say. Their tastes were more like cardboard. Yeah. You know. I mean, I like to eat right, but I don't want to eat cardboard. I mean, that's not my idea of eating. And I'm really a follower of a guy, Michael Pollan, who I really think is great and says, eat foods that are satisfying that you like, but just eat less of them.
And some granola really does taste.
Oh, it does.
Taste,
it's awful.
Yeah.
This
is a good recipe.
Yeah. This looks wonderful. Okay. So let us start with it. So we start out with 3 cups of old-fashioned oats. Now, I've got a question. I've always wondered, I mean, why old-fashioned oats? Do you think there's any difference? I mean, that's what I would use, but between that and quick mixing oats or whatever they call it?
Well, you could use the quick, but I think because it's more of a natural, in the natural state, I think it would be healthier.
Yeah, I think. Okay, so 3 cups of old-fashioned oats, three-quarters of a cup of flaked coconut.
Yes. And you can use the sweetened or the unsweetened. I've tried mm-hmm. it both, and they both work.
Which one do you like?
Well, I kind of like the sugary one.
Yeah, it's okay. It's okay. Just have less. 1/2 cup of toasted wheat germ, mm-hmm. 1/4 cup of oat bran, mm-hmm. 1/4 cup of sunflower seeds, mm-hmm. 1/4 cup of slivered almonds, My mouth is watering. Uh-huh. I can see Tom is smiling.
Yeah.
A quarter of a cup of chopped pecans or walnuts.
Or both.
Or both. Mm-hmm. I love pecans. I love walnuts. I'd probably use both. That's exactly it. 2 tablespoonfuls of sesame seeds. Now, they add a taste. My wife doesn't like sesame, so I would leave that out.
Okay.
And the nice thing about a homemade recipe is there may be one ingredient you like, and you can add more of, and there may be one ingredient you don't like. So
absolutely.
You have a choice. You have a choice. A quarter of a cup of honey. Gosh, I remember I once had rose honey, which was from bees. We lived in Nova Scotia for a while, and we went over to this woman's house, and she had this huge rose garden, and she had an apiary, and the bees made honey that had the tremendous perfume of roses. Mm. I have never tasted anything like that again, but that's in Nova Scotia, and that's
sounds wonderful.
A couple decades ago. Okay, 2 tablespoonfuls of olive oil.
And it's light-tasting olive oil, so you don't want the extra virgin, which is strong. You want one that is a little bit less weak, and I use the Bertolli.
The Bertolli. How did you choose olive oil versus a more neutral oil like canola oil?
Always hear olive oil is healthier.
Mm-hmm. So a healthier. So you could use olive oil, canola I might use. Okay, 2 tablespoonfuls of frozen concentrated orange juice. Great. 2 teaspoons of vanilla extract, which is good. Not artificial vanilla extract, vanillin, which doesn't taste as good. 1/2 teaspoon of salt. Cranberries or dried blueberries, a whole cup. That's quite a lot. You like?
And it is dried cranberries.
Yeah, you like that. Do you like dried cranberries? I love them.
I do, and they're, again, packed with nutrients.
Quarter of a cup of chopped dates. A quarter of a cup of apricots, dried apricots. And 3 tablespoonfuls of raisins. What kind? The black ones or the golden?
You could use either.
Either one.
There's a lot of stuff in this.
Yeah, a lot of stuff. You've got to get a lot. You have to be motivated for this. Okay, I'm going to make the recipe. Preheat the oven to 350 degrees. Then in a large bowl, combine the first 8 ingredients, mixing well. In a smaller bowl, combine the honey, oil, orange juice concentrate, vanilla extract with a little bit of salt. So most of those are the wet ingredients. Mix well, then pour over the dry ingredients. Then spread the oat mixture out into an ungreased baking pan. Bake for 7 minutes and stir. Bake for another 7 minutes and stir again. Cool completely. Then, when it's done, add the cranberries, the dates, the apricots, the raisins to the cooler mixture. Stir well and store in an airtight container until ready to serve. And it's wonderful. And I've heard that you put the unused granola in your freezer. Is that correct?
Yes, it makes 8 cups. So it's a good amount because you don't use that much over your yogurt, or that's the way I like to use it, or over your oatmeal.
Mm-hmm. When you serve it, you put milk on it, or?
You can eat it with milk, yes.
Yeah, it would be good. You know, low-fat milk, 1% milk is probably what I would choose. 164 calories for a serving, not a lot. This is filled with fiber. It's really a good source of dietary fiber. And one of the things that I think is so important in this day and age is we have to make our own food. We've got to get away from these prepared foods because they're often not good, they're not as healthy, they don't work as well, and then people don't understand food. And I think obesity, among other things, is because we've given up food to basically the food companies to make for us, and look what happened to us.
And I bet you save a lot of money by making it yourself,
too. Oh, I believe so.
Oh, yes. I'm sure.
And the taste
sure.
is so much better.
Yeah. And taste is an issue. And when foods taste better, I think we eat less of them.
That's
I think that's
right.
part of the key. Thank you so much for this recipe.
Thank you,
I am sure.
I love your show.
Well, thank you.
thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
And for sending us this winning recipe, Ilona gets a free copy of our cookbook, Heart Healthy, Low Fat, Guilt Free, and Tasty Recipes from the Kitchen of Zorba Pastor. And if you want to enter our recipe contest, it's easy. Just email your original low-fat recipe to us at
Zorba@WPR.org.
And if you want a copy of today's recipe, visit our website at
ZorbaPastor.org. And you can get previous recipes by looking in our archives at ZorbaPastor.org. You can sign up for our weekly podcast there, too. Again, that's ZorbaPastor.org.
one 800 462 7413 is our toll-free number, 800-462-7413. Here's a listener with us now, Zorba, in Summers Point, New Jersey. Hi.
How are you?
Fine. How can we help?
Well, I it's actually giving you a call because I was recently diagnosed with celiac disease. And years, probably about 28 years ago, I was diagnosed with gastroparesis. The problem that I'm having is finding something nutritional that will accommodate both diseases.
Right. Now gastroparesis is paresis sort of means movement, is the inability to sort of move food out of the stomach into the body. What do you take for that, first of all?
I actually take domperidone. I'm allergic to normal motility drugs.
Domperidone, what is that? Sounds like Domperion.
That sounds good. But that would actually irritate the stomach.
It would irritate, and it would be rather expensive.
Yes. It's actually a motility drug that is exported from Canada.
Okay.
Your doctor can write a script from it, but it has... I've been on it for 25 years, and it has still never been FDA approved.
Okay, so metoclopramide, which is the drug that's approved, doesn't work for you as well as this other motility drug. And Propulsid, when that was on the market, did that help you?
I never even was familiar with that. Mine was more Reglan and Compazine.
Yeah, and Reglan is metoclopramide. Propulsid,
right,
which is another drug that moves the stuff through, was approved, and then the feds took it up. Okay. Now, the newest thing, you have a celiac disease, so that's a gluten intolerance.
Yes.
That's a very specific disease, and that's really where the limitation comes. Now, with the gastroparesis, it's a function of how you digest. So there's no – it's not the same as celiac disease where it's specific. It's that they may say you should do this, but you may find out in your body you don't have to do it completely. So in other words, you might find that, for example, a piece of raw fruit doesn't bother you, but two pieces of raw fruit will bother you. And I think it's a matter of sitting down with a dietitian, discussing this, doing it more than once, frankly. I would do it 3 to 6 times.
Uh-huh.
I would sit down and I would say, look, these are the foods. I want to see what you think as the dietitian. And then I would experiment, just like little kids, when we first give them foods to see if they tolerate it, you try it. So, for instance, if you want to try strawberries, you have a strawberry and see what happens. It's not, once again, the wheat is very specific. You got to avoid wheat. But as far as the other foods, the gastroparesis, the inability to be able to move food out of your stomach, that can be quite variable. It depends on how much you put in, what the calories are, how the food is prepared, and so on. And you've been living with that for years, obviously.
Yes, I have.
Does the medication work from Canada?
You know, I've actually never really noticed that it actually does, but... I mean, there's times when I go off of it and I really don't notice the difference.
Well, then I'll tell you something I would suggest. Propulsid, at least used to be, and I'm not sure, P-R-O-P-U-L, I think it's C-I-D. Propulsid was made by Johnson & Johnson, and there are doctors who are allowed to prescribe it for patients who have known gastroparesis if they get special permission. It's sort of special permission, and they have to have it's called an IRB, and there may be a gastroenterologist in your area. Look it up on the web. It's a Johnson & Johnson product, and see whether or not that helps you, because that drug was dynamite for patients with gastroparesis, is that it had a side effect, and what you have to do is have an electrocardiogram before to see if you can tolerate the drug.
Okay, gotcha.
Because it has to do with something called the QTC interval, and it's a cardiac problem that can occur, but the EKG, if it's normal, you can tolerate the drug. And I would try that and see if it works, because that will help you eat more. That drug was very, very useful. And the Canadian drug may not be doing that much for you.
Right.
So good luck. You need to sit with a dietitian, because you've got a lot of questions which are good. Wheat, that's not on your – that won't be on your court. You know, you're a potato rice person, and wheat is not on your court. But the other foods, you've got to experiment with a dietitian who knows you, and you'll figure out what you can eat.
Okay.
So.
Okay, thank you very much.
800-462-7413. And before the break, Zorba, let's take a quick question from the Zorba Pastor on Your Health inbox. This question comes to us from Bess in Madison, Wisconsin. She writes, I suffer from visual snow, like TV static across my whole field of vision. I tend to think of it as visual tinnitus. Any suggestions to help alleviate this?
Well, my first suggestion is you need an eye examination. I mean, that is critical. Quite often, when people have floaters in their eyes, and these are little sort of they're cells that are floating in the eye that can interfere with your vision, that's what they describe. They'll say, I've got some snow that's falling, and sometimes there's not a lot that can be done for it, but there actually are, interestingly enough, eye exercises that can actually move the snow out of your field, so it's at the bottom of the field and it doesn't bother you. But you need an eye examination. You need a diagnosis. It's not clear to me what it is, and I think that's the most important thing. Doesn't sound like a retinal detachment, but clearly it's interfering with things. Get your eyes checked.
Clear the static in your lifestyle questions. Just send them to the show in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
We have some really interesting research coming up, lots more of your calls, and of course our medical myth buster later on right here on Zorba Pasture on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. We'll be taking more of your calls, of course. But before our next call, genetically altered salmon coming soon to you.
Yes, right. Now, I have a question for you. Would you eat genetically altered salmon?
You know, I probably would.
You would?
I probably would.
Yeah, I wouldn't. I wouldn't eat genetically altered
salmon.
Well,
you drink genetically altered milk.
Yeah, I don't care. Well, first of all, if we look at growth hormone, BGH, in milk, you cannot detect anything in the milk that shows whether or not BGH affected the cow or not.
I mean, they say the same thing about salmon.
The salmon is different. You're actually eating something that has grown twice as quickly, and I wonder about that, and I think about it, and if it got labeled, that would be different. But, you know, like milk, it hasn't been labeled. But going back to what the FDA has decided, the advisory committee has said we don't have enough data to rule on it. That's what the advisory committee has said. And it was kind of a shock because there's lots of data out there, and that may be their way of finessing it. Now, the full FDA makes their decision, but more often they follow what the advisory committee does.
Well, what do the data that are out there say?
Well, the data shows that you have salmon that actually causes them to reach full size in about half the time. So that's what it shows you, that these eggs reach full time in about half the time. But the issue in my mind is the fact that all of a sudden you'll have salmon which are genetically altered in pens that may then affect the salmon, the wild salmon, worldwide. That's really the issue. You know, are you letting a gene in there that then affects the wild salmon that we don't know anything about? Now, it's interesting because when it comes to plants, I have not been against genetically altered plants such as soybeans that are Roundup Ready soybeans and others, because it's a plant and it grows. And basically, the bean is the plant, but the growth to me is totally different. But when it comes to an animal that I'm eating, which is salmon, I just have a different feeling about it.
Yeah, but that's not really a science-based.
Well, that's exactly it. So the feds have said right now it's not scientifically based. One of the issues I think they have to grapple with is how do they label the salmon? And I think consumers, if it's going to be approved, should have a choice, and it should say on the salmon, genetically altered salmon. Then you can decide. And it may be half the price, in which case you go, well, I don't mind if it's genetically altered, I'll pay half the price. But often when they introduce things like this, they also don't necessarily label it the right way. But the Fed said there's not enough data. That means they're waiting for it to get more data.
Well, we went through this labeling thing with milk, and I don't think there's any BGH labeling.
There's no BGH label because you cannot tell the difference. But this is salmon with the salmon grew twice as quickly, and there's a different gene in the salmon itself. So, you know, I'm against it. I'm a Luddite. I'm a Luddite when it comes to genetically altered animals. I think that you've got to label it, and I think the FDA has to be very careful, and I'm on the side of the people who say maybe we shouldn't do it.
800-462-7413 is our toll-free number. And Zorba, our next caller, is waiting in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Hello.
Hello, gentlemen. It's a pleasure to be on your show.
Glad to have you. How can we help?
Well, the question that I have today is I'm researching B12 shot therapy, and I want to know if I'm on the right track and if there are any side effects I should be concerned about.
B12 shot therapy for what?
Well, I'm 48 years old. I work out, good health, no medication. Mm-hmm. But there have been two symptoms in the last few months that have been concerning me, and I've been very tired. I'll wake up, have my breakfast, and about mid-morning I'm extremely tired for the rest of the day. And I'm also very frazzled as far as my stress level is pretty high in my life. And I think that I don't want to go the medication route. And I see my friends drinking those energy drinks, but I also don't want to include ephedra or caffeine in my life. And I thought B12 might be a natural avenue to go down.
Yeah, but Zorba will know the answer to this, but I don't. They have B12 pills. Why not take the pills instead of get the shots?
Well, I've done is that there's different types of B12, and you need to get the pure form. And so I was talking to my chiropractor about it, and I understand 12 shots are more of the pure form.
Well, let me clarify a few things. B12 is B12 is B12. In other words, there is no difference. It is a molecule. It's manufactured by animals, by the way. There is no plant source of B12. And people who are vegans, very significant vegans, often do not have B12 deficiencies. And the reason is when they're eating their vegetables, they're actually getting some animal parts, you know, the insects that are in there. Now, let's go to the only qualified use for B12, and that is pernicious anemia. And the reason is there's a part of your intestine, which is the terminal part of the ileum, the end of the ileum, this one part of the small intestine, that makes something called intrinsic factor. And intrinsic factor allows you to absorb B12 from pills. And when you don't get that, if you have something called Crohn's disease or you've had surgery in that part, so you don't absorb it, so you have a B12 deficiency, that's where B12 shots come in. B12 is an old-fashioned, absolutely quackery thing that has been going on for about the last 40 or 50 years, that you take it for energy and vitality and other things. And a number of years ago, a number of studies went on, well, really good scientific studies in the 60s and 70s that showed it is not effective for it. It's quackery. It's junk.
Well, now here's what I either heard or read about B12 somewhere, is that our bodies manufacture it, and they stop at a certain age. So as you get older, you have less B12
true.
Than
our bodies do not manufacture B12. We don't make it. We need it. Vitamins are things we need from the outside. Mm. That's why they're called vitamins. That's where they came from. Yeah. Life forming. So no, we have to consume B12. So the stuff that you have, when you're talking about you don't want to take ephedra and caffeine, of course you don't want to do that. You have to look at other ways to look at your fatigue and your life. For instance, are you getting 8 to 9 hours of sleep? Are you taking a power nap of 20 minutes in the afternoon? Have you gone to meditation and to think about meditating for 15 to 20 minutes to try to ease your mind for some of these things? You can do things in a natural way. That really should be done, because you don't want to take ephedra. Of course, ephedra is junk. Shouldn't be taking side effects. And caffeine, it depends on whether or not you like caffeine or not. It's a safe drug, but, you know, it's a natural drug. But B12, it's junk. I have to tell you, it is pure, absolute quackery that it works for that. And it must be coming back, because in the last month, I've had two or three people who have called up and said, you know, I want to start to get B12 shots because I don't have energy. And I haven't heard about this in 10 or 20 years. Mm. And what happens is things will go in phases. So either somebody's on the net, somebody's on TV, or there's a new book out called B12, Your Secret of Life.
Okay, well, that answers that question. I was just trying to figure out what I can do, you know, to try to increase my energy level. I am getting up there in years, and so, and then, of course, you know what to do to kind of de-stress. But thank you so much. I appreciate your time. I love your show.
Thank you very much, and we appreciate the call. That number, again, is 800-462-7413. Well, Zorba, it's that time in the show for our medical myth buster. We have a listener myth today from Charlie in Oklahoma that deals with blood pressure. Charlie writes, "Dear Zorba, a friend recently shared with me a tip for lower blood pressure. The first is to eat 2 bananas a day. Is this true, and does it matter how ripe the bananas are?"
Well, the answer is it's true. Bananas may lower your blood pressure. It is true. I wouldn't stop taking your blood pressure medications, but they may lower it because of the potassium, although there may be something else in bananas. We've known for years that high potassium foods may lower blood pressure.
And the more the better? Two a day instead of one?
Well, it's probably one or two. It depends. You know, when it comes to things like this, you have to see if it's going to affect you. So the way you do it, let's assume you've got a home blood pressure monitoring kit. And I recommend if you're going to buy one, spend $50. Get a good one. Don't get a junk one. Check your pressure for a week and then eat two bananas a day. Check your pressure for a week. See how much it lowers it. So for some people, it may be substantial. Mm-hmm. Now, if you're going to take those two bananas a day, it probably doesn't matter when you take it, but you're doing it because it's a potassium-containing fruit. Mm-hmm. And there are other things, other fruits and veggies that also contain potassium, and you may try that too. But yeah, basically, a banana or two a day may keep your blood pressure at bay.
Mm. Oh, good.
Or away.
I have a blood pressure measuring kit, but I have to drive for half an hour and then sit in the waiting room for half an hour before, it works.
Before the kit works.
Yeah.
Before the kit works. You've got it. I got it.
Yeah. If you have a myth driving you bananas, send it to us. We'll try to bust it. Just send it to the show in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
800-462-7413 is our toll-free number. And a listener joins in now, Zorba, from Springfield, Missouri. Hi.
Hi.
What's up?
I actually called in about 3 weeks ago, maybe a month ago.
Mm-hmm.
I had bad acne. I'm 30 years old. Maybe you guys remember.
Yeah.
And Dr. Zorba recommended I just go on Accutane.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right.
And so I went to the dermatologist, and we talked about it for a while, and he said that I would probably be a good candidate for it, though. I'm a little old, and that it works better in teenagers. The younger, the better, because he says it changes just the whole makeup of your skin, basically.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
He said, you know, I'll go ahead and prescribe it to you. You know, how good is your insurance? And I was like, well, you know, I don't have insurance. I'm paying privately because I'm a consultant right now. I'm self-employed. So he told me it was about $700 a month.
Oh, my goodness.
Wow. And it's a three-month, I think it's a three-month course of medication. Isn't that
he
what
he told me it would be between 3 and 6.
3 and 6 Whoa. Months. Wow, that is a lot of money.
Yeah.
Huge. Yeah.
So you'd like some less expensive advice.
Right.
Yeah, that's exactly it. You know, it's interesting because Accutane, at this point, you would think would be a generic, but it's not a generic. It's still a name brand drug because of the issues with side effects, nobody in the generic world is actually going to manufacture it. I had no idea the cost was that much. So the cost for you, would basically, would be between $2,000 and $4,000 for the treatment. That is a ton of money. That is a lot of money. So you didn't go and get the prescription, I take it.
No, that's more than my rent.
You know, that's funny, but it's not funny.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
It's funny, but it's not funny. Now, I have a question. Before, if I remember correctly, you had tried a variety of antibiotics. Is that correct, or had you just tried one or two?
I had tried two or three different kinds. I don't tolerate them well.
Don't tolerate them well means what?
Yeast infection.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Let's talk about that, and let's look at the cheaper way to go. Because there are other things. First of all, if an antibiotic hasn't worked the first time, it might still work the second time. So if we look from a yeast infection point of view, there's a great drug called Diflucan. And Diflucan, one pill, gets rid of yeast. Okay, so if yeast infections are the problem, one recommendation I would consider is taking minocycline or doxycycline. They're both in a generic form. I would take the maximal dose of those antibiotics. They're not expensive. They're cheap. And I would take a Diflucan tablet, 150 milligrams, that's D-I, F as in Frank, L-U-C-A-N, once a week. That's what I would do. I would get some Diflucan, which is not that expensive a drug either, and I would just take it once a week, and I would try that and see. Because if that's the side effect of antibiotics, maybe you can do this with cheap, inexpensive antibiotics, as long as we keep the yeast under control.
But then am I going to be on antibiotics for the rest of my life or until I'm menopausal?
Well, let's look at what it means. First of all, if you can get this under control, you may be able to be on less antibiotics and keep it under control. But if your acne is this bad, just like people need blood pressure pills, you may need an antibiotic. But instead of taking it every day, once you get it under control, maybe you can take it every other day. There are people who have been on antibiotics for 20 to 30 years without significant side effects of certain drugs, such as doxycycline or minocycline. So that's what I would do. I would, but you're right. Is it going to be forever? Well, let's see if it works first. I mean, if it doesn't work, you don't have to worry about it. It's not going to be forever, right? But if it works and you can minimize the side effects and you can afford it, then it's worth doing.
Well, okay. We'll give it a shot.
Good luck with it.
I wish I had a fairy godmother that I could come over to your house and just give you that twinkle and all of a sudden you'd have good health insurance. Sorry. Good luck to you, and thank you so much for calling us back.
Okay, well, thank you for the advice. Yep.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Before we run out of time on the hour, Zorba, the Zorba Pasture on Your Health Grammar Police are responding to your call. Not too long ago, during our recipe segment, you asked if it was pronounced El Dente or El Dante. Well, this isn't the first time the Grammar Police have helped with this issue, but Deputy Laura wrote in to offer her 2 cents. She writes, El Dente translates to the tooth. And I think you already know that it's a method cooks use to test for correct doneness for pasta. Bite a piece of pasta with your front teeth. Overcooked is mushy. Undercooked is too hard to chew. Dente, think dental, dentist, dentures, dentition, dentine.
I got it. Thank you. I got it. I will think that way, but dentine.
Whether you favor El Dente or mushy punishment for grammar crimes, you can only do so by sending your citation to the Zorba Pastor on Your Health Grammar Police in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
See you next week, Zorba.
Stay well, Tom.
If you missed anything during the show or just want to download our recipe podcast, visit us on the web
at ZorbaPastor.org.
Don't forget you can call us anytime at 800-462-7413. Zorba Pasture on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. Wally Cleaver and Eddie Haskell, a.k.a. Brad Kohlberg and Adam Friedrich, are the two guys with guilty smiles on the other side of the glass in charge of this hour. Adam Friedrich is our executive producer. Our theme music is by Leo and Ben Sidrum. For Zorba Pasture, I'm Tom Clark, hoping you'll join us for the next episode of Zorba Pasture on Your Health.
Copies of today's show are available through the radio store at 800-747-7444. Ask for program number 1015Z. More on healthy living, including heart-healthy recipes, podcasts, show archives, and listener feedback, is available online at ZorbaPastor.org.
PRI, Public Radio International.